With the Supreme Court potentially overturning Roe v. Wade, it has a lot of prominent voices rethinking the issue, which leads us to today's video. Did Joe Rogan's stance possibly change on this issue, shifting him from being historically very pro-choice to more seemingly pro-life? Recently, Bill Maher came out and revealed some facts he didn't know about the pro-life movement until this week.
Did you know that? I didn't know that.
Now, both of these guys have been historically very liberal and very non-religious. But is it possible that some of the radicalization we're seeing has pushed these guys further and further to the right?
Why are you pushing me over to the right?
So on this video, we're gonna be reacting to Joe Rogan and Bill Maher's commentary in light of the recent Supreme Court leak. Now, to be fully transparent, I am a person of faith, but in today's video, we'll be looking at some non-religious reasons that may be causing a shift to some people in the pro-choice community.
Ruslan.
I was watching Crystal and Sagar, and they were talking about this overturning of Roe v. Wade potentially coming down, and basically saying, oh, look, the right, quote-unquote, played themselves on this issue. Now, historically, full transparency, I am registered as an independent. This is not going to be a religious argument for this issue, but they referenced this Joe Rogan episode and how people who are seemingly centrist that have been pushed to the right are waking up to this issue because it's not as crazy as some of the trans stuff and the Florida bill, that this is actually way more sensible. And they're saying, the left is saying, this is a woman's right. And so I want to react to this Joe Rogan clip that they referenced because I actually went and dug it up to see if what is Joe Rogan actually saying. And there's this other clip from Bill Maher. And if you can wait and stay with me till the end, especially if you aren't sure about the pro-life position or you want to ascribe ill intent, but you're willing to give me just hear me out and consider three things that I'm going to tell you at the end about the pro-life movement that may shock you, amongst other things that Bill Maher found out this week. We're going to be reacting to all of it. Let's jump right into this Joe Rogan clip. There's going to be some profanity in this. So hide your kids, hide your wife. Smash that like button one time for the YouTube algorithm. One of his latest podcasts with Doug Stanhope. The question I was curious about is, has Joe Rogan, who is not a person of faith, he identifies as agnostic, who is staunchly pro-choice, has he shifted at all on this? And let's check it out.
Someone leaked something that says that they're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. I don't know if it's real. Everyone's already commenting on it as if it is real. I don't know if it is real. But apparently what that means is that it's going to be up to the states. So people who live in states where abortion is already, you know, like blue states, I don't think they have a worry. But other states probably do. You know, it's kind of...
I appreciate him clarifying that. Most folks don't know what Roe v. Wade even means. They think this is it. This is it. This is Handmaid's Tale, right? So Joe Rogan clarifies and says, no, if you're in a blue state, this doesn't affect you. If you're in a conservative state, this is going to affect you, potentially affect you a lot, all right? Now listen to what he says next.
Hey, medical tourism.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. Yeah. It's weird people telling other people what they can and can't do with their body is weird because, like, Texas has a weird law. No, I shouldn't say weird law. A terrible law where it's 6 weeks.
Okay, so he thinks that it's about telling people what they can and can't do with their body. I'll come back to that in a moment. But he says Texas has terrible law, 6 weeks heartbeat law. Okay, that's what the law is in Texas. I believe that's what the law is in Alabama. Remember that what got pushed up to the Supreme Court was a 15-week ban. Remember that date because that's important. We're going to come back to that in the Bill Maher clip.
You just missed your period. Like people
Found out I had COVID.
Yeah,
I just found out one of my close friends and his wife are pregnant, and they're at 5 or 6 weeks. So I think a lot of people find out they're pregnant that early, but I digress.
Exactly.
Could have been a baby ago.
And girls who have irregular periods, that happens all the time, I think. I mean, I don't know. I don't have a vagina.
I love Rogan. Like, women have, you know, whatever. Like, I think that's just, I appreciate his candor and his honesty. Let's keep watching.
But that's what I hear. I hear it happens all the time. And so for the longest time, you know, people have dealt with that and just sort of live their life and take a pregnancy test. And now you find out that you're pregnant. You literally have like a week to find a place, get an abortion. If you want to get an abortion, make a decision. You have to make a decision. You know, like if something happens to you, like what if you get raped? Anything like that. Or what if, you know, some like a family member.
So people tend to go to this logic, and it's okay. I think there's a lot of anchoring bias that many people exhibit in this. Watch how Doug snaps back in a second. But just to be clear that if you combine incest, rape, mother's health, all those things together, if you combine all those things together, that is less than 1.5% of all abortions. Okay, so I understand that those are realities, and those are awful circumstances that I couldn't imagine what it would be like for a woman to be in those types of circumstances. But those account for less than 1.5% of the total abortion. So what we're saying is, hey, we're making an exception to the rule, right? We're making an exception to the rule based on the rest of the abortions, which we'll get into and what Bill Maher discovered this week. But listen to how Doug Stanhope snaps back on this. Watch this.
I used to have a bit about it, but it's a talking point. Like, how should it be okay in cases of rape? That's like saying a fetus is a living thing unless his dad was an asshole.
Right.
That's funny. That's like saying a fetus is a living thing unless his dad was bad. So that he's pointing out to some of the inconsistencies in that logic, saying, hey, that doesn't make a lot of sense if you're saying that this is not a human, and you know what I mean? Like, but if the dad's bad, then I guess it's okay. That's not a human anymore, right? So it's kind of funny that he's pointing that out.
Right.
How is it the baby's fault his dad was
exactly
racist?
Right. How is it
the baby's fault? So now we're acknowledging it's a baby, not just a clump of cells. Okay, I appreciate that. I appreciate you, Doug.
The baby's fault
Joe Rogan acknowledges the baby.
What if it's your father or something? I don't like people telling other people what they can and can't do, but it gets weird when the baby gets like 6 months old.
Aha! But it gets weird when the baby gets like 6 months old. Sounds sensible.
You know, it gets weird when they're really, really pregnant, because in some states, for the longest, I don't know what the rules are now, but I know that some states had late-term abortions. And sometimes you need one for medical reasons, right? Like, the woman could die if she gives birth. Like, it's a...
Correct. Less than 2% of all those situations count for that. Okay. So Joe Rogan is against late term abortions. He's saying that's not good. Okay. Listen to what else he says next. Listen to what he says about what it should be.
Well, if you look back, what was your favorite part of being a fetus?
Well, what was your favorite part of being three? You know, should I be able to shoot you at three because I don't want to take care of you anymore?
What a fantastic question. What's your favorite part about being three? What is your favorite part about being three? You remember being three? You don't remember being three. You didn't have full memory, full consciousness. They say sometimes babies don't even have full consciousness. Where do we draw that line?
It's one of those things. It's like, I am 100% for a woman's right to choose. But as a human being, just a person observing things, there's a big difference between a little clump of cells and a fetus with an eyeball and a beating heart.
But the law in Texas is 6 weeks when he said the law was terrible, but that's what the law is with a heartbeat.
And for anybody to pretend there's not, it's you're not doing any
but
argument.
But where do you draw the line?
Right, where do you draw the line?
Yeah,
that's the question.
So what he says is a fetus with a beating heart and an eyeball, where do you draw the line? He says it's something different between a clump of cells and a fetus with an eyeball. Remember what he said initially. What was bad about Texas's law? 6 weeks heartbeat. Then he, in his own instance, said, yeah, but when it has an eyeball and a heartbeat, it's bad. When do you guys, just curious, when do you guys think the eyeball, the heartbeat, 10 fingers, 10 toes develop? What do you guys think that is? 6 to 8 weeks. The heartbeat, the eyeball, the fingers, 10 fingers, 10 toes, you can look this up for yourself, 6 to 8 weeks window. So, If we're going to say women should have a right to choose, except for when they have an eyeball, when they have 10 fingers and 10 toes, and it looks like a human in there. Check out what Bill Maher said in some of the information that he found out this week.
I learned things this week because this put it on the front page that are pretty basic things that I did not know about abortion. Like, in Europe, the modern countries of Europe, way more restrictive than we are, or what they're even proposing. If you are pro-choice, you would like it a lot less in Germany and Italy and France and Spain and Switzerland.
Why is that? Oh, because they have abortion bans with almost no exceptions. Guess when? 12 to 15 weeks. Ah, you mean that Florida's and Mississippi's proposed ban at 15 weeks is more liberal than France, than Italy, than Germany, than... Really? Really? Isn't that interesting that the rest of the industrialized world has stricter guardrails for when a woman can't have an abortion than we do in the United States, where elective abortion is legal? We're one of seven nations where elective abortion is legal past 20 weeks. Isn't that interesting? And Bill Maher, who's staunchly pro-choice, just discovered this. He just discovered this this week.
Did you know that? I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
That's right. Okay. I learned most people who are pro-life are women.
Did you guys know that? Most folks who are pro-life are women. Interesting.
Not know that? Most abortions are from, fitting for Mother's Day, mothers, people who have a kid. That makes sense.
That's a little joke he snuck in. 45% of abortions, another interesting fact, is from folks who've had one previously. Folks who have had them previously keep having them. 45%, almost half, continue having them. What you're telling me is that there's a pattern here of the type of folks that are having these procedures done who have had kids or have had them before, and let's be honest, probably should know how biology works, right?
I thought this is interesting. Most abortions now, even when you go to a clinic, are done with the pill.
Yeah.
The pill. And
so all this talk of back alley abortions and it's going to go back to women dying in the streets. That's what he's getting at. Remember, Bill Maher is an atheist, staunch liberal that recently been pushed in the right.
Pills are easy to get in America. We know that. So, you know, for the people who say we're going back to 1973, we're not.
No.
That's just factually inaccurate. And with how easy it is to get a pill, I'm wondering if this is, what do you think? Is this going to be the galvanizing issue that the left think it's going to be?
Is this going to be the galvanizing issue that the left think it's going to be? Two folks that are not religious, two folks that are starting to think differently about these things, saying, hey, it's different when there's a cluster of cells, quote unquote, even though we would say that when you create unique DNA, human DNA, that it's more than just cluster cells, but based on their logic, it's different. It's going to be something that it looks like a human, has an eyeball, has 10 fingers, 10 toes, has a heartbeat. Yeah, that's kind of crazy. And then they discover, oh, wait, by the way, we got some of the loosest, wildest abortion laws. Honestly, being consistent with some of these things that we're seeing, being more open to the idea that, you know what, the folks who genuinely are pro-life aren't just about trying to limit a woman's rights. That there's half of the folks getting aborted are other women. Think about that for a second, right? So it's not just pro-lifers want to oppress women and take away their rights. No. When we're looking at the biology, when we're thinking these things through, it's a bit more nuanced than just making a caricature of the folks on the pro-life position and saying, you want to oppress women, you're bad. Right? It's a bit more nuanced than that. And I appreciate that Rogan, though clearly he's not pro-life, and Bill Maher, who I'm assuming he's not pro-life, is being more objective in having these conversations. And I'm going to give you three more things to think about. Three more things to think about with regards to this conversation that have nothing to do with faith, nothing to do with religion. Hey, this video is brought to you today by our very own Bless God Shop. The name Bless God is inspired by Luke chapter 2, verse 28, where Simeon encounters a baby Jesus in a temple and proceeds to, quote, bless God. The apparel is intended as a daily reminder to live our life in a way that brings honor and blessing to God. Check out the link to the shop in the description or in the pinned comment below and pick up some of the most sustainable and high quality apparel out there. Few more things to consider with this conversation have nothing to do with religion or faith. One, when Roe v. Wade passed, we did not have the same technology that we have today with regards to things like sonograms, and now especially 4D sonograms. And if you look at what helps reduce abortions, a lot of times it's vans, 4D sonogram vans being parked in front of abortion clinics giving away free 4D sonograms. Now, the sonogram is actually what shifted something that was pretty revolutionary in the pro-life movement. Dr. Nathanson, and you guys can go look up his story, was a staunch pro-abortion practitioner for the majority of his career. And what happened was he slowly started looking at the technology and started seeing what that was in there. He started seeing the baby in there, and he started seeing all of the details and all of the particulars. And in the 80s, he ended up seeing a video of a 12-week abortion happening. That's the first trimester, okay? And that instantly led him to no longer practice this act anymore, and he ended up releasing a film, and you guys can go look this up, and it's called The Silent Scream, where you can see the facial expressions. You could see the baby pulling away from the vacuum. You could see it experiencing pain. You could see all of these different attributes that are unique to a human at 12 weeks, okay? And remember, the developed world has a ban, by and large, at 12 weeks. So Google the story of Dr. Nathanson and look up what one of the biggest staunch proponents who was a part of a lot of the early pro-choice movement with the Roe v. Wade, and how he completely did a 180 with regards to that, because there was technology that gave us an insight, and that as the technology advanced, it's only became more and more and more clear. So I want you guys to really, really, really consider that. In 30 states, when a mother is carrying a baby and is murdered, it counts as double homicide. In 30 states, we acknowledge that the other person in there is a person with rights, and their rights are violated if someone destroys the life of the mother and their mother. And so what happens is the person who destroys that life ends up being charged with what? Double murder. This is a fact. You can look this up. So we have all these indirect ways of acknowledging that that's a human in there. But when it comes to terminating this pregnancy in the case of an abortion, all of a sudden we're okay with it. Logically inconsistent. Either that's a human in there that deserves rights, or it's not. Okay, and you have to determine on what that is. But why would we then acknowledge that? Hey, in the case of that happening to a pregnant woman, that is actually double murder, two, not just one murder. Why? Because we know. And the last thing to consider is that people will say, well, if there were more safety nets, like in the European nations, if there were more people who were willing to adopt, like Christians who are all about pro-life, but they're not really about pro-life, they're just about pro-birth. Okay, well, something to consider is, one, people of faith, and specifically practicing Christians, adopt babies at more than double the rate of the rest of the population. And so if we're looking just at the raw numbers, if you're a follower of Jesus, you're adopting babies at double the rate. Add on the top layer of how expensive it is to actually adopt a baby, somewhere in the range of $20,000 to $80,000 to adopt a baby. If the adoption process was less restrictive, if the adoption process was easier, I believe that Christians, followers of Jesus, who are pro-life, would be willing to step up and adopt more kids if the process was less cumbersome. Okay, if it was less cumbersome, if it was less expensive, that you were going to do with all these babies. Hey, you know what? I know quite a few Christians that open their homes. Okay, and I don't go on here and I don't flex this in my personal life on here as like a virtue signal flex. We are raising a child right now that's not biologically ours, right? I'll spare you the details of it. But we're raising a child. There's a lot of folks that if you cleaned up that process and you made it easier, people of faith will step up. People of faith will step up and they'll raise these kids. Another thing is, don't lump all pro-life folks into the same spectrum. In the same way that we wouldn't lump everybody on the pro-choice side into the same category, we would say that, hey, folks over here, don't. So there's folks that are really, really, really extreme. They think things like condoms are bad and sinful. They think things like birth control should never be given out. I'm not on that. I think whatever you can do to reduce unwanted pregnancies, with the exception of not aborting them after they're conceived and they clearly have a heartbeat and they clearly have 10 fingers, 10 toes, they clearly have an eyeball, right? If whatever we can do to prevent that, we should do that. Okay, and if that means providing more resources, providing more pathways to adoption, providing more condoms, providing more education on what biology is, which I don't know how you don't know what basic biology is, and if you, you know, hey, this is how this works. Maybe people don't understand. Okay, whatever we can do to provide those resources, not everyone who would say, man, I'm pro-life is against that. And I would say that it's probably a radical fringe minority that believe condoms bad, don't give kids condoms, don't educate people on sex ed. I think that's a small minority. That's not the majority of people that are going to go, no, I think we should do our best to educate people. And so abstinence obviously is the 100% way to protect people. But I, as a follower of Jesus, don't hold non-Christians to Christian standards. I think people who don't know Jesus aren't going to live in a way that's obedient to Jesus. Okay. So I understand that that's a reality. And I'm okay with making the concession of, hey, we should create more resources for that. Right. And I understand. I get all the other complications with pregnancy. I get all the complications with the procedure being necessary for saving the lives. I get all that. But let's not use the exception to the rule and make it the rule. There's someone that can speed 150 miles on the freeway and it'd be inconsequential to them. And they're a fantastic driver because they, right? We don't accommodate laws to protect the people who are on the road based on the exception of one person who may be somehow justified in driving recklessly on a freeway. No, we create laws for public safety. We've been doing this. This is why there's things that are around that force you to wear a seatbelt, force you to drive a speed limit, right? So on and so forth. So let's not act like the government doesn't step in and create laws and boundaries for human conduct to protect other people and vulnerable people, not to mention this act is not inconsequential on the mother's health, right? Depending on where she is in the process, like the emotional damage that it does, the mental, the spiritual, but also the physical damage that a lot of this stuff can do, like depending on especially if it's in the second trimester on a woman's body. So these things, this idea isn't as outlandish as we think it is, that there are reasonable, sensible people that even if they're not followers of Jesus can look at it and be like, yeah, no, this is wild. Like, this is pretty crazy when you really think about it. And so do some research. Look up what a fetus at 6 weeks looks like. Look up what a fetus at 7 weeks looks like. And you start noticing that looks a lot like a human in there. And then look at what's actually being proposed legislatively. And then you'll realize, no, it's not just about we're going to take women's rights and da da da. No, it's also about extending rights to other people that are more vulnerable, that we would extend those rights to them if they were in a situation and the mother was harmed. They would get charged for that, right? So, and if you're a follower of Jesus, I don't say this enough. I say it and you guys get mad at me because you think I'm just talking about money and all. If you're a follower of Jesus, man, build your life in a way where you are financially stable, where your family is solid, and you're positioned to take in the orphan. Because James tells us very clearly that true religion, according to God, is to care for the widow and to care for the orphan. In our context, I'd even add, and maybe you guys think I'm crazy, but I'd even add the single mother in there. To care for the widow, to care for the single mother, to care for the orphan, to take care of the least of these, as Matthew chapter 25 says. And so if you're a Christian, extra credit points, go do some homework. Read Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 24 is what people get all freaked out about the end days and all that kind of stuff. But if you actually listen to where Jesus takes it, in the conclusion of Matthew chapter 25, it calls us to care for the least of these. And so I commend you, build your life in a way that will allow you, maybe not today, but in 5 years, 10 years, to open up your home and take in a child. Why? Because not only do I believe scripture encourages us to do that, but I also believe that historically, the church has always done that. The church has always extended mercy to that. If you look at Rome and what was happening in Rome where babies were getting discarded, it was the Christians that stepped up and took some of these these kids in and took in some of these babies and raised them as their own. This is in our DNA. The conversation of safety nets and do we need more safety nets and all that kind of stuff, that's a separate conversation. I'm more than willing to have that conversation. I think sometimes, yeah, man, we might need more safety nets. Maybe we do need to look at what, I don't know, better healthcare options because of how messy and that whole system is and how the number one reason for people file for bankruptcy is because of medical bills. Maybe that needs to be cleaned up. I don't know what that looks like. What I do know is that to me, safety nets is something that we all have to want. If you look at the Scandinavian nations, people pay more in taxes. If everybody's down to pay more in taxes, then we can evaluate that conversation of safety nets. I'm not opposed to that. I think it depends on what we're talking about. In some regards, you guys might think that that's very progressive of me. I don't think that's that progressive to look at healthcare and be like, wow, this is a pretty flawed system. Maybe we got to figure something out, right? That's beyond reasonable, right? So I think we have to figure out what those things are and say, okay, well, what are we willing to give? What are we willing to take? What I'm not for, and this is the last thing I'll say on this and then I'll be done, is I'm not for assuming that wealthy people are just going to pay for everything. Yeah, we need to make healthcare free. We need to make we need to make preschool free, we need to make daycare free, we need to make all these things free, right? And we'll just tax the rich, which is a lot of what you hear from like the AOCs. Let's not do that. You know why? Because there's this concept called wealth flight where rich people just take their money and just leave, right? They'll go move to Puerto Rico. They'll go move other places. They'll figure it out, okay? So don't just assume that. And that happened, by the way. That's happened before in places like South Africa where people just left. They just bounced. Wealthy people just bounced. So don't assume that you could just indefinitely raise the taxes and assume that the wealthy people are going to be ones to pay for all this kind of stuff. No, we all need to be willing to pay for this sort of stuff. If we're all willing to say, you know what? I'm willing to pay more in taxes. I'm willing to do things and create a sacrifice too. But let's also equip people to live responsibly and to build scarce skill sets and build lives in a way where they don't need a government program. Nothing wrong with a government program if you need it. I'd rather us not need it. I'd rather followers of Jesus not need the government program. I'd rather us be the government program. I'd rather us step up and privately take care of people who are really looking at this as a crisis and not just take care of them as a way to get them to birth, but take care of them as a way to get them to where men are stepping up and becoming the godfathers to these kids that they don't have no relationship to, but they're taking care of. That's something that I remember in their Armenian church. I grew up Armenian Apostolic, where you would have godfathers, the older men in the church who were wealthier, and they would be godfathers to these kids, and it meant much more than just like, oh, if something happens to the family, they'll take care of it. No, a godfather was someone that stepped up, took care of, was in that child's life, was around, and was invested, right? And maybe we need to see more of that, like active fathers stepping up and helping and leading. And again, I think the church can do a great job of that. So those are my thoughts on this, man. I appreciate you guys watching. If you want to hear my thoughts on a time where Hollywood actually came to the defense of Chris Pratt's politically incorrect faith and views, check out this video over here. All right? Peace.